This is an oral history interview with Ace Nielsen in Missoula, Montana, on July 21st, 1984, Smoke Jumpers Oral History Project. I'd like to start out, Ace, by asking you, when did you start jumping?
Right after World War II, I was discharged in fall of 45, and then in the spring of 46, I started my career as a jumper.
Had you had any previous experience with the Forest Service before you became a jumper?
None at all.
What had you done in the service?
I was a Navy pilot and flying torpedo bombers.
And when you became involved with the Forest Service, you were a jumper?
I'd never made any jumps, actually. No, no, there was no jumping involved in my military career.
What made you decide to try smoke jumping?
I don't know. It might have just been a whim. Two friends of mine, a close friend that I flew with, had gone to college with and flew in the Navy, became interested in smoke jumping, and he and another friend introduced me to the idea, and I picked right up on it. I didn't have anything planned. I was waiting around to attend the University of Idaho that fall, and the other choice I had was staying home and working on the farm.
Where did you train to jump at?
In 46, we came to Missoula, Montana, here in Missoula to train, and we trained here for a month, and then returned to McCall, Idaho, where I was stationed.
Do you remember your first training jump very well?
Very well.
Can you tell me about it?
In fact, it's interesting to me that it might be the only jump that I can, remember quite distinctly, in that I can remember looking out the door, I can remember the jump spot, I can remember what things looked like as I descended. And if you asked me that of any other jump, I would probably not be able to describe it, but I do remember the anticipation. I can remember, I'd flown a lot, but I had never been confronted with the idea that I was going to have to jump out the door, jump out of the plane. So it probably was a unique experience for me, as more so than other. But it was an experience, and it wasn't, I don't think, all that frightening. I can even remember sitting inside the plane and quite vividly, and my thoughts, and going out the door, and I think relieving tension and all that. Once you went off, as soon as I got on my foot on the step and stood up, I started to yell at the top of my voice, and I continued that throughout my career.
What were you thinking about when you took that step off the plane?
That would be difficult to remember. I don't know if I was thinking about now, is the chute going to open, what's the sensation going to be, or will it, the chute strike the tail, or is the static line tied, or is it, did I snap the static line and all that. But I think we had so many thoughts going through our mind that it was kind of confusing to single out a few of them.
But when you got on the ground, how did you feel?
Oh, I think it was elated, I flew in the Navy, and I think I had some kind of the same feeling as, the first time I landed on an aircraft carrier. I was just, it was a real uplifting, You felt really, it was something you'd really accomplished. It was significant.
When you went through training, what kind of facilities did you have for training and for living?
We were brought up to, we rode a bus up to Missoula, and we were put in barracks out at a place, I think it was 9 miles close to Frenchtown, and I never did fully understand whether 5 or 6 or 3 miles or something like that, but it was in that area west of here in Missoula. And the barracks was a long barracks, much like the military. And we had beds with just sleeping bags on them. As I recall, it was just sleeping bags. And we were pretty well out in the open country. And I remember taking one walk, cross-country walk. And it was pretty open. But the one thing I can remember about the training was the meals. It seems like that we always ate well, except perhaps on the fires, but at that time, because we had sometimes K rations and just canned juices and things like that. But I can recall that we had lots of roast beef. It wasn't any question what the fare was going to be that night. We had roast beef. So that's, let's see. I'm a little embarrassed at the details of our training and some things that are not immediately, I can't recall.
That's all right. What did your family think when you told them you were being a smoke jumper?
I think after I flew in the Navy, nothing surprised them anymore. You know, no, I feel that it wasn't. You know, that is kind of strange. I think that they was glad that I was going to do something for sure. I was going to go back to work because I'd been out of the military about six months, and all I did was drive my dad's car around and run these gas out. He was glad to see me go back to work.
Did you ever make any mistakes while you were going through training?
Yes, I thought perhaps the mistake I made is, I can't say that I made many, but I remember an incident when I was training up here that I think I was the only officer. You know, I'd been an officer in the military, and the rest of them were, you know, and I was an officer and pilot that hadn't got into combat, so I didn't really have any credentials there that should make me feel any better than anybody else, but they all thought I was better, you know. And so I remember one night that in the barracks, I made the statement, and apparently too loudly, that I just didn't appreciate the accommodations, you know, the sleeping bag and no sheets. And I said, you know, I've never had to sleep without sheets. And here we had veteran paratroopers around that had slept in foxholes and in the mud and slogged around. And here I was maybe thinking I was better than somebody else. And the next morning, the next day I came in, and somebody had either short-sheeted me or did something pretty obviously and kind of contemptuous, and I challenged everybody in the barracks that whoever the lowlife was, I was ready to do battle. But then, you know, and I think I gained some respect from that, and I got along quite well.
Most of the guys that were jumping servicemen?
Very, very many of them. I'd say, you know, just offhand, 75%. Anyway.
Excellent. How many guys went through your training class? Do you remember?
I thought that there was about 20 in the first class that came up here and trained for a month, and we were followed by another contingent out of McCall of another 20 jumpers.
How many of those guys washed out?
I can't remember anybody washing out. I remember an incident where when we returned to McCall in the fourth trimotor, this one jumper, he felt like jumping out when we got over the field, because he'd been, he was a veteran jumper, military jumper, paratrooper, and he'd never landed in the plane before. I thought it was interesting that he had taken off so many times, but he'd always jumped out, and here he was going to have to land in one. It was scary.
Do you remember your first fire jump?
Yes, I got a story in my album here of the first fire jump, and we were on the way to a fire. It had been reported many miles over in the Middle Fork of the Salmon River country, and on the way we spotted this, what we thought was a fire. On the way, we had five jumpers, and so they jumped us. They thought, well here we've spotted it. We spotted a fire on the way, we'll make sure and get that. And it turned out that there wasn't any fire. This morning, early morning fog, it was before 6 o'clock in the morning we jumped. And I had spent the night at home. I'd gone down the valley Boise Valley over the weekend, and I got to bed about 3 o'clock, and I had to get up at 4 and head for the Middle Fork country. Only we jumped out about 20 miles, 25 miles north of McCall, north of the Upper Payette Lakes, and it was a real struggle getting our equipment back out to the road where we were to meet a pickup after we suppressed a fire, and it was down logs and mosquitoes you can't believe, and I was glad to get back to town.
Can you remember the largest fire that you fought?
The largest fire was I think we were just talking about that this morning. We jumped on a fire close to the mouth of the South Fork of the Salmon, above Mackey Bar. It was a small fire early. I think it started in the afternoon, and probably lightning caused. And they say that it was a small fire, 20 acres, but they said within an hour later it was 500 acres. And it was windy, and I think the fire was creating some of the wind that we had to jump in. And it was a question whether we should jump or not. And I don't know, we've discussed it a number of times, especially recently, since smoke jumping has kind of been a main topic of our conversation, that kind of debating why I was used in this fashion as kind of a drift chute. The spotter would look down there and the foreman would say, hey, that looks kind of dangerous down there. We'll jump Nielsen in there and see if he survives. And if he makes it, maybe anybody else can, or else they'd say, well, he's a skilled jumper, and I think we can get him down safely, and then we'll make up our minds about jumping anybody else. So we don't know which one it was, whether they thought I was expandable or maybe I could be a good test of the situation. It was such a large fire, and obviously it joined such proportions that it was just a matter of packing our gear and going down to the airport at the Mackey Bar on the Middle Fork and flying us out.
Did you know what they were talking about using you as a test, as a stream?
No, I think I accepted the challenge. You know, I like, hey, don't worry, I can do it. You know, something like that. So I didn't feel that they were risking my life for some reason or another. But in fact, I fell up to the challenge and that I'd get down safely. So, but afterwards, you're thinking about it now. I wonder.
How many jumps did you make over your career as a smoke jumper?
36, I believe it was.
Did you ever do any flying for the Forest Service to drop jumpers off?
No, I didn't do that. The pilots would let me take the controls of the tri-motor once in a while, coming and returning from a fire, is about all.
How was it like flying that tri-motor? Was that a pretty good plane to be flying for the
Well,
day?
I think it was... excuse me, it was a grand old plane and felt very secure and safe in it. I think that was probably the favorite of all of us. It was a plane that we jumped at a slower speed and we didn't have any complaints about the tri-motor. It was it had the short field capabilities and going in and out of those mountain fields and we have nothing but good to say about the tri-motor.
How many bases did you jump out of?
Just McCall solely.
Just out of McCall. How would you compare the base at McCall to the base here in Missoula? When you were training here in Missoula, then you went to McCall to jump?
Well, we kind of like, you compare the Marine Corps to the Army or Air Force or the Army Air Corps. We were a smaller unit, probably more knit type and more camaraderie. We're the smaller group and had good relationship, I thought, between the jumpers and we seemed like recognize our place in history pretty much. We were the first jumpers following the war, and it was a new experience, and nobody had done this before. And I think we recognized that, and probably we felt proud about it.
Did you see any returning servicemen who went and smoked on the project, who came back from the war with the attitude that they didn't have to work, the government owed them a living. It really didn't fit in very well with this jump organization.
No, there was none of that. No attitude like that. I don't think the servicemen or the paratroopers and that, I think they were hard working. They had a good attitude about work. I think everybody did back then. I don't think back in those days when jobs were hard to find, it was hard work was easily accepted.
You think that the depression had any effect on your values towards working, the work ethic?
The depression? I lived through the depression, so I think we came to know hard times then, and we had hard times, I thought, lasted right up until the war, and the war was an interlude in there where maybe we had forgotten some of the hard times. And I feel that the depression was something that, if you can survive it some way, isn't a bad experience.
But did it affect your attitude towards your job in any way?
I was pretty young during the depression, and I thought that, I think that the depression, if anything, made me more appreciative of the job, because we were paid well, and we were paid better than most jobs, and of course you probably have questions later on as to my overall impression of some impressions I had of the type of work, but we truly felt, and maybe in retrospect, looking back in later years, the opportunity and the once-in-a-lifetime chance. It was a job very unique, and I think we realized that fact. Maybe, I don't know, we couldn't have. I think it was in retrospect, because it truly was a unique job.
How did you feel about having to do project work?
Well, it was interesting that maybe my experience in the Navy, that it seemed that maybe I ought to be more closely involved in the actual flying part of it. And what would that be? It would be in the jumping and the chutes and stuff. So I was made immediately a rigger, you know, and working with parachutes. And I thought, I don't know if Wayne Webb remembers that he became a rigger and eventually foreman. And as I remember, I talked Wayne into becoming a rigger. He thought it was a big responsibility. He didn't know whether he wanted to accept the responsibility of men's lives like that, to be packed their chutes for him. And as everybody knows, Wayne became an extremely good rigger and parachute. He could, with a sewing machine, there wasn't hardly anything he couldn't do. I felt a little bit like maybe I pointed him in that direction.
Do you feel that there's some kind of advantage to having someone who's an actual jumper being a rigger?
I think I don't think that's really a necessity. I don't think it hurts anything. I don't believe that there would be any conflict or any advantage. I think that a non-jumper would feel the same responsibility as a jumper would. I don't think we have any problems. I think once you judge people's character more and then assign them as a rigging job, and I don't think whether they jump or don't jump is a factor.
What kind of planes were you jumping out of?
Well, I jumped out of three different kind of planes. Of course, trimotor was a big thing in 45, 46, and 47, probably into 48. But we did have a single-engine travel air that we carried probably mainly our two-man fires. Maybe they carried three or four at a time. And then I had the experience while I was training in Missoula jumping out of the DC-3, which was a unique experience, and one that if they even offered me that chance today, I'd be tempted to do.
How many men would be in a plane when you took off for a fire?
Very seldom did we ever leave the airport, especially in the trimotor, with less than maybe 8 jumpers, but I guess there was time 4 or 6, but I don't think we ever left with 2 men in the trimotor. But that was it. You know, we didn't have a DC-3 in McCall, so we didn't jump any more than 8 on a fire at one time.
Did you get to know the pilots very well that were flying the planes?
I, maybe having been a pilot myself, I got to know them quite well. Bob Fogg and Warren Ellison is two. And I think those are the only two pilots that I could even name that flew. I don't know if they, any other pilot was flying the plane that I jumped on. And, I got to know Warren better than I did Bob.
Hear about any of these pilots ever having a problem with the plane?
I don't recall a second that they ever had the slightest problem that I was aware of. Maybe I might have been more conscious of it, having flown myself, that they were doing anything abnormal or having any problems I wasn't aware of.
Did you ever get hurt smoke jumping?
Think about that one for a while, but I don't even remember a single scrape.
Did you ever see any other guys get injured?
Well, yes, I remember on this the big fire I was telling you about that exploded on us. My cousin was a jumper at the time, and I know that when he landed, his head hit a rock, and I helped bandaging him up with a little first aid there. But then Kenny Roth jumped on a fire, and he slipped and fell a few times and cut himself on a crosscut saw that he was carrying. No, he just fell, and the weight split his finger, the webbing of his finger. But I'll probably think later, my golly, don't you remember the poor guy that did lit on his head or something? But nothing comes to my mind right now. If anybody, of course, I know that there was people getting hurt on we talk a lot about some accidents under the fires, but boy, right now, none of them come to my mind.
Which would you say is more dangerous, the actual jumping or fighting the fire?
I've thought a lot about this, and a lot of people have accused me of, when I jumped, that I purposely, self-consciously, tried to land in the trees so I wouldn't be confronted with the hazard of rocks and down logs, which obviously was a big hazard. You never know when you jump out of that plane what it's going to be, what you're going to land on. And Lord knows that there's a lot of down logs down there, and there's a lot of rocks in certain areas. And boy, that old tree landing can be really just like, you know, jumping into a feather bed at times, but it can be awfully hazardous too if it just spills the air and lets you free fall 100 feet. But on the fire, you know, all it takes, I think, on a fire is just a little, some safety precautions. I don't think fighting fire needs to be hazardous at all.
Is it physically demanding work?
It can be. I think one fire can be just, I was just talking to a friend of mine about the fire we jumped on Hell's Canyon. I said that was a maximum effort. I don't think anybody worked any harder than we did to quell or control that fire than he and I did. And then another time, and that's of course the purpose of smoke jumping is initial respawn and being on the fire before it is more than just smoldering. And many times it is just a child's play put in extinguishing a fire. And it's satisfying, of course, to know when you jump on a fire that, you know, if you got there even minutes later, you might have had a real conflagration. But I'd say that many times I'm sure there was fire that people were just dog-tired, really dog-tired, and they realized that they personally were kind of responsible for it going into a huge project or fire. And I think the response was always accordingly.
What was the first thing you would do after you land on fire?
I think to get the chutes off and grab your shovels and the heck with anything else and get over there and check on what the stage of the fire was and if there's any particular hazard, if you're going to hot spot some things and put a trench around it. Or the first thing was the fire. You didn't want to waste any time getting over there. It was no that should have been the response, and many times it was, but I was reading some of my notes where I'd say we flipped a coin and see who's going to go check the fire and who's going to retrieve the gear. So I think maybe we had our priorities mixed up sometimes.
Were you using silk chutes when you were jumping?
Yes, yes.
Was there any kind of special care that had to be taken with those?
Not any. I don't know what other type of chutes there were other than that, so I don't know how we cared for all of them the same. The fellows that rigged had their own special non-standard chutes. We had some Eagles and we had some, I can't remember, some of the off-brand chutes we had, but there were some features about it that we liked, and it took special care in packing and took longer and had some, I think one had ears on it with guidelines so you could steer them better, and since we felt that we had to go to the they were more difficult to pack, and we had to take longer and more care that maybe we ought to be the ones that jumped them.
Were you aware when you came back from the service that Forest Service had been using conscientious objectors as smoke jumpers during the war?
I think I found out about it. I didn't know anything about smoke jumping when I came back from the service, so I couldn't have known anything about that. I didn't know anything about smoke jumping until somebody said, "Hey, would you like to be a smoke jumper?" And I said yes before I found out who'd been the previous smoke jumpers and what stage it was. And I should have probably felt some animosity, perhaps, especially if I had maybe seen the combat duty, you know, thinking that they were up here living the kind of life that, you know, in the forest and in the lakes and the beaches and maybe having a nice job like that, but I don't remember any of those feelings.
Were you aware of when you were smoke jumping that you were actually making history?
I think we had a sense of that. I've had a sense of history about, I think I have I'm kind of in the nostalgia pretty good, so it seems like that I reflect a lot on anything that I do, and maybe too much and not what I'm going to do. But I'm sure we didn't at the time have that true sense of it. No, and I don't think anybody could have.
What did you feel when you heard about the Mann Gulch fire here in Montana?
Well, that was a bad fire year. As I recall, that might have been in 1949, a year after I was out of jumping. In fact, it was such a bad fire year, I halfway expected or hoped that maybe they'd call me back in. You know, it was having such a bad year that maybe some of us old jumpers ought to go back and help out the situation. But It was interesting to me. It was probably something that made an impression on me as much as anything, and I could understand how it could have happened, and did a lot of second guessing, you know, too, talking about, well, they should have done this, maybe they should have done that, how could it happen? And then maybe at the same time realizing how easy it might have happened, and maybe it might happen again, maybe this is more dangerous work than we realized it, then thinking that, maybe we were lucky, and maybe it's a lot more hazardous, and maybe it's going to happen again.
The other guys who were jumping with you, 1948, the year before the fire, how did they feel?
About the Man Gulch, mm-hmm. or Man Creek, or whatever. Well, I didn't have, since I was kind of isolated then, I had gone back to the farm. I had finished school and was farming, and my contacts with ex-jumpers was minimal, and I really didn't have to have a chance to really talk about it very much.
Did they train you how to fight a fire, or did they just give you a Pulaski and say, go to it?
No, we had a, interesting enough, we had a practice fire, and that probably is the hardest fire we ever had to control, because, you know, the embarrassment of if it got away from us, and I think there was a few times that it looked like it was going to maybe go on up the mountain. But I felt that we were well trained, and I've many times thought back how qualified the people were that trained us, and what a good job they did.
Did you ever think back to maybe training smoke jumpers is something that you might like to have done?
Oh yes, I looked back and thought that, you know, I should have changed my major at the time, since I did like the life and the excitement of it, that I should have stayed on. I think I had the opportunity that probably could have fit into the program and maybe got full-time work. So I think there's many aspects of smoke jumping that I would have liked to continue in.
Did you ever have to make these long pack outs?
Yes, I think I had my share.
Remember the longest one you made? Or one of the longest?
One of the longest ones, I think we jumped over the mountain from McCall, and there was quite a bunch of us. We were talking about it at lunch today, and we thought it was unfair. It seemed unfair to be so close to McCall and then have to have such a rugged trip out. We jumped over the mountain and had to climb back up the mountain to a road on the other side, and we were almost inspired or motivated to get up that mountain and down the other side so we'd get the guy that that rode up the best way out. We wanted to make sure we had our crosscut saw with us. We didn't lose it. We was going to go to work on him. It seemed like it was a difficult way out, and a long one, and up a pretty steep mountain.
Did you have any packouts that were just a snap, a breeze?
Oh, yes. We had our share of those, too. That I remember jumping in one of the highest peaks of the Sawtooth Mountains, and that was another fire I jumped on that I felt that I was used for a drift chute, because we jumped alongside of a lake, and I get to looking back, the air was, you know, at that elevation, and the time of the day, the air was thin, and we descended at a good rate, and I had that mixed emotions later thinking about it, that how serious it would be to land in the lake with that kind of suit on and not having any kind of training to get out of water. But anyway, I can remember the trip out of, they brought a pack string in to us, and we started out in the evening, and how beautiful it was to ride down the trails into the Stanley Basin by Redfish Lake, and there was some really great experiences coming out of fires.
What kind of gear would you take with you to fire? did you have on your person when you jumped out of the plane?
Well, at that time, I think it bears some comment that even though that we were in the smoke jumping, had been really in its early stages, it was amazing how well how far they'd come along in design of jump chutes and the fact that they wore the helmets with the masks on them and the Shovel and Pulaski were ideal for fighting fire. And I suppose we were as well equipped as they are today, unless in some instances I understand that they might drunk. I understand soon after I terminated my employment that they had pumps and they might pump out of cricks to quell the fire. But I think the Pulaski and Shovel is probably pretty standard equipment today, and that's what we had then. But I would think the big benefits today might be the improvement is rations. They've got to be, when they say the best way out for jumpers, they should have known already what's best. And maybe with helicopters, they've improved on that. But as far as how a person is prepared for a fire and what equipment to take in, I don't think they've advanced very far, very much in that nature aspect.
How long would it take you to exit from the plane until you touched the ground?
Well, I thought that right today, I'd probably, maybe one of the first questions I'd ask somebody, a pilot or a spotter, and say, what altitude were we really jumping from? And I think that we tried to jump, say, 1,500 to 2,000 feet. And as far as descent time, I thought that probably we were on the ground inside of a minute and a half or something like that. Sometimes it was interesting when we hit thermals, I mean, we were suspended in the air almost, that presented some interesting problems.
What kind of problems did it present?
Well, it could drift you away from the jump site, you know. You might land down the hill along from the fire, and you got to pack a long way to it, and you get to lose time in getting to the fire. And it's kind of scary sometimes when you found maybe the only jump spot in the whole area, and you've got so intent on getting in there, and then you can't, and you see it drifting away from you.
How do you guide your chute down to your landing spot?
Well, these were, even back in those early days, we did have the slotted chutes with guidelines that we could pull on and regulate the air that would be expelled or coming from the canopy, and we'd be able to turn the chute. We could face the chute in any direction we wanted to and guide it. We get some forward speed more by planing, I think. Planing may not give you a lot of forward speed, but it'd make you descend faster if you were drifting away from a jump spot. So planing and manipulating of the guidelines, and then of course the planing was kind of pulling down on the shroud lines and collapsing the chute and giving it and making it descend faster.
Did you ever have that problem of drifting away from your landing spot?
Maybe in every fire. No, I think it always amazed me that the spotters done as well, good a job as they did. I never did spot a jumper, and I was always admired those who did. It must have been more simple than I gave them credit for, because it seems like the jump spot was always accessible whenever I jumped.
How would the spotter let you know when to go out of the plane?
Well, it was a yell and a slap on the back, and then you'd go.
And how would the spotter pick out the landing spot?
Well, he tried to, it was a judgment thing. They tried to get close to the fire, and they wanted, I guess, not guess, but I'm sure they took an account of which way the wind was blowing from the fire. They didn't want you to drift into the fire from the jump spot. They didn't want the hazards. They'd probably weigh the hazards in situations, and if they could rationalize jumping you in one place over another with all constantly in mind, getting to the fire in a hurry.
How would the spotter, what would he be doing during flight?
The spotter, well, he was kind of a motivator, you know. He was, I guess maybe since he didn't think he was going to have to jump, he was probably braver than anybody else. And I'm sure he sensed his responsibility and was probably anticipating the jump spot as much, in anticipation of the fire and the size of the fire and the jump spot. And I think I'm sure he felt that he's got to get these guys down safely, and it's a real responsibility. And I don't know any of them that wasn't accepting it that in that way.
Okay, I'd like to stop here and turn the tape over. What would you do after the fire season was over?
Well, I was a student at University of Idaho at the time, and we had to get back to the university for rush week, and it was just, it was almost like the fire season terminated just in time to get up there. I remember one season where two fellows said, "Hey, we're going back to school. Can we get the next fire? We'd like to move above you two, and we'll get the next fire. And then you'll be here longer, you know, going back to school." And so these two fellows, next fire they jumped, but there wasn't any more fires. The other fellow never did get the jump anymore that year. But no, the job was just almost designed for college students. It just was beautiful.
Is that most of the guys who were jumping that time as college students?
Not really. I think that as time went along, this was the case. But we had more of the military, ex-military, and and of course those fellows, I think, had the shorter jumping careers because they were going back to regular jobs, mm-hmm. and they needed some time to look around. And so a lot of those fellows, the ex-paratroopers that didn't return to college, and there was a number of those that they might jump a year or so, and then they find their lifetime occupations. But many of them, young fellows that had been in the military, started college, and they were available, I know so many of them, 4 or 5 years and while they completed their college.
How did you feel when you learned that Forest Service had decided to let women in the smoke jumping?
I don't know if I really heard that. On the way up for the reunion, I was kind of surprised and shocked a little bit that there was a girl smoke jumper in the McCall unit and might have been there as many as 3 or 4 years. And many questions came to our mind at the time, and we discussed it quite a bit. And I think the feeling was, I think we had a feeling that, why, you know, what's the point of it? You know, it's, there's a job designed for men, there's a job designed for women, and we don't want to center spread a Playboy, and they shouldn't want to be smoke jumpers. You know, there's the job. So I think I'm really opposed to that. I'm not radically opposed, but I don't see the point of it.
Do you feel it's going to be the future of smoke jumping?
Future of smoke jumping. I thought maybe when in the advent of helicopters that maybe smoke jumping might be in danger of being phased out, but I think if it was going to be that it would have been before now. And no, I think it's got a good future. I think that they probably improved training methods, and they probably, it's almost inconceivable that they can advance any further than, but even if they don't, I think they've got a good thing, and it would be interesting to get some estimates of what smoke jumpers actually achieve as far as savings of, dollars and timber and things of that nature.
What would you do with your free time when you were not fighting a fire or doing project work?
Well, this was, when you're in a resort town like McCall, you're single, you just wonder how many gals would be up from Boise over the weekend, where there was so many summer homes on the lake that we would go into town, I would think, almost every night to have a beer or two before we came back. And then, too, I think we had that wartime. The war had just been over, and we had a little different attitude about life, have fun and be merry and things like that. And I think we overdid it. I think there's no question about that. And looking back, I don't think my performance on a fire was really hurt by anything that I was doing in off hours, but I know it did in any number of situations. But I think that, you explain that by saying, hey, these guys were World War II veterans and they were just letting off some steam.
How do you feel about the statement that been generalized about smoke jumpers, that they work hard and they play hard?
Well, that was sure true, and true in our case. I don't think there was very many shirkers when you get them. I think the fellas had a real sense of duty and responsibility. I don't think I heard anybody make the statement that so-and-so was dogging it on a fire. It's kind of unusual, and maybe we should have been kind of looking out for it. But no, I sure have to go along with that statement. I don't know how true it is today, but I know it was true back then.
How do you look back at your years as a smoke jumper?
Well, it was really unique. Maybe we didn't have an appreciation of it like we should have. We should have maybe enjoyed it more and realized more, maybe had a more sense of history, and we didn't have to play that hard. We should have been thinking more of promoting smoke jumping and had a little different attitude in a way. Maybe we shouldn't have that ex-military, post-war, devil-may-care attitude more about it, and realize that maybe what we did would had a lot of to do with the history. I mean, the future of smoke jumping. If we were going to do the job, we did it well, and felt a little bit more responsible.
Was there any kind of a rivalry between the smoke jumpers and the ground crews?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, they were ground pounders, and we just felt that they couldn't touch us as far as fire suppression, even after they got on the fire. And poor slobs, we kind of felt like I don't know what to compare it to, but I don't think that. I think there was a feeling that we were above them, and we got the good jobs, and we got here, and we were fresh when we got on the fire. We can do a better job, and we didn't think we needed them. We could get the fire out, of course. I think we recognized when we needed some help, but I think that there was a superior feeling, no question about it. Having been selected as a smoke jumper give you a little superiority complex.
You feel that your experience as a smoke jumper in any way affected your life after you quit smoke jumping?
Well, I had a lot of, no, it really did. You know, there was maybe three accomplishments in my life makes you more, when you, self-esteem, it adds to one's self-esteem along with, maybe graduating from the university, getting a university education, a degree, and being flying in the Navy, that added to one's self-esteem. And it all helps, and that was a big help.
Well, I think I've run through my list of questions that I have to ask. Is there anything that you'd like to add you feel that I've missed?
No, I just thought that, I was fortunate in my, I thought, like I mentioned earlier, smoke jumping was unique in many ways. It's something that very few people have the opportunity of doing, and the life living in the mountains and jumping in beside the remote lakes and in the timber were truly, in Montana and Idaho, was a wilderness area that you might truly say no man has trod before. And I had the unique experience of jumping on fires, even though I was stationed in McCall, and I jumped on a fire in Oregon, one in Montana, one in Wyoming, and fires in Idaho, and I thought for 3 years that was a feather in my cap, or I was lucky to be able to do that. But I think maybe I've talked to fellows later that they wish they'd been a little more serious-minded at that time and made it maybe a greater contribution. And it's just, when I think back, and I'm just amazed that we, even though we give the overhead kind of a bad time, I think a man recognized that they had some good men, like Lloyd Johnson and Ferguson, and was there at McCall back in 46, and they did an excellent job of selecting their men that stayed with them, and I think the unit profited because of fellows like Lloyd and Fergie. And you can't, in retrospect, be very critical of them, although they got a bad time. But it was an experience that really was really a rare one. I think we look back and it was enjoyable.
Well, thanks for the interview.
You bet. I hope I said something different.